This is a production of South Dakota Public Broadcasting.
Pleasure of calling this meeting of Senate State Affairs to order this morning. I'd like to welcome everyone for this, I believe, our second meeting. We have a dignitary and a former South Dakota State Senator within our midst. He just happens to be kind of walking across the threshold, former Senator Al Kurtenbach. Senator Kurtenbach, you are welcome here. Ask the Secretary to call the roll. Here. We have a quorum. We have minutes before us. Ask for a motion.
So moved.
We have a motion. We have a second. Is there discussion? Seeing none. Senator Gray. Second. Senator Knutson. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Having seen our secretary struggle with how you spell your names as testifiers, it is important that we have accurate minutes, and so if you'd be so kind as to assign the roster back if you plan on testifying on a bill. The bills that we have before us this morning, I'm going to hold Senate Bill 41. With that, let's move through our agenda. First thing on our agenda is we have a confirmation of Dana Dykhaus to the South Dakota Science and Technology Authority. Is there discussion? Yes. Anyone who would like to testify on Mr. Dykhaus's behalf? Senator Bell.
Mr. Dykhaus has been active in almost everything in the state. Any worthwhile cause dedicates a lot of his time to the community and the state, and I recommend advice and consent.
We have a motion. We have a motion. We have a second. Is there a discussion? Seeing none, ask the Secretary to call the roll. Carries. We have a confirmation of Graham Fleming to the South Dakota. I don't think you need to move consent. I think that as soon as we adopt the new Senate rules, I think that happens automatically. However, as
Mr. Chairman, we have discussed the possibility of revising our Senate rules to allow for appointments on consent agenda. That's something I'm hoping that we may in fact take up today, but we have not adopted that rule yet, so at this moment in time there is not a consent option for appointments.
Correct.
Well, Mr. Chairman, the Majority Leader and I have discussed that, and I'm in full agreement that we should have the ability to move a nomination to the consent counter, but I don't think it would happen automatically. I think it would require a second motion, just as any bill would require a second motion.
Okay. We have a motion for consent. Oh, actually, we can't do that right now, can we? Okay. Senator Bell, with great pleasure. Your motion is out of order. next item on the agenda is confirmation of Graham Fleming to the South Dakota Science and Technology Authority. Mr. Fleming, I think, is not in attendance here. Anyone care to speak to Mr. Fleming or Dr. Fleming? Senator?
I just had a question about this nomination. I'm not familiar with him, and I assume that he's eminently qualified. Is there any requirement for membership on the Science and Technology Authority that the individual be a South Dakotan or reside in South Dakota or not? I don't know. I raised the question because it appears to me that probably Professor Fleming resides in California.
Kevin.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator.
You know, just by practice, I think it would probably be a good idea for someone from the department, if the nominee is not present, for someone from the department to make the pitch on that person's behalf would be great in the future.
Okay. Mr. Horsch.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, good morning. Kevin Forsch, I'm with the governor's office. I have the opportunity on behalf of the governor to be the liaison to the South Dakota Science and Technology Authority, and more specifically the project, the Sanford Lab at Homestate. I can vouch for Dr. Fleming. He was appointed on behalf of the governor in April 2008. Dr. Fleming has a PhD in chemistry from London. He currently is at the School of Berkeley. He's been the deputy director of the Lawrence Berkeley National Lab. He's attended every meeting that we've had so far, either in person or by telephonic, Dr. Fleming has been an excellent board member. So I hope you would support his nomination.
Questions, members of the committee?
Thank you. It does sound like he's eminently qualified. My question is whether there's any requirement that members of this authority be South Dakota citizens, and I don't know that there is.
Senator Heideprin, there is not, and Dr. Fleming, he fills a position of a scientist, if you will, which isn't a requirement in statute, but it's one that we thought was very important to this project, and having been a deputy lab director of a national lab, which we're hoping to be in 2012, we thought he would be an excellent board member.
Any questions, members of the committee? Questions?
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Do I hear a motion?
Chairman. Senator Clarkson. I would move we advise and consent to the appointment of Graham Fleming to the South Dakota Science and Technology Authority.
We have a motion, Senator Clarkson. Second. We have a second, Senator Gray. Is there discussion? We have a motion. We have a second. Ask the Secretary to call the roll.
Senator
Dahl? Aye. Hanson? Aye. Heideprin? Knutson? Aye. Olson? Aye. Brody? Aye. Gray? Aye. Hanson? Aye. Motion carries. With deference to members of the committee, I will move the confirmation of Mr. Rappenberg, Mr. Jones, and Mr. Graff to our next meeting on Friday. That then brings us to Senate Bill 58, require notification regarding the construction of certain wind energy products. Do we have proponents?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Gary Hanson. I'm a public utilities commissioner here in the state of South Dakota.
Commissioner and Mayor Hanson, you are welcome here.
Thank you, sir. Senate Bill 58 would provide that, and if you have read it, it's pretty obvious what it does. At the same time, there are some nuances that I should point out. The bill provides that anyone who is going to construct a wind project of greater than 5 megawatts would inform the Public Utilities Commission that they are going to do that construction approximately 4 months, well, it states 4 months prior to the start of construction. The reason for this legislation is that there are some significant challenges, I think all of you are aware of, with transmission in getting renewable energy out of the state of South Dakota. There are also a lot of projects that are taking place at the present time. The Public Utilities Commission has responsibility for siting authority of any projects that are of 100 megawatts or greater. This does not change that. It just provides that those projects would at least have to inform the Public Utilities Commission that are less than 100 megawatts and greater than 5 megawatts. That would help us from the standpoint in planning for transmission issues. The state of South Dakota is a member of the Organization of MISO States, which is, MISO is a Midwest Independent System Operator. It is a regional transmission organization. I serve on the board of directors. This transmission organization is responsible for the dispatch of transmission. There are approximately 73,000 megawatts of energy that are in the queue at the present time. Much of it is wind energy. There is a great deal of wind energy that is capacity that is going through processes in South Dakota at the present time. We are also members of the UMTDI, which is the Upper Midwest Transmission Development Initiative, which I also serve on the executive committee. And this is a planning group that was put together by the governors of North Dakota, South Dakota, Iowa, Minnesota, and Wisconsin in an effort to overcome some of the transmission challenges and figure out how we're going to pay for the transmission. And with that, Mr. Chairman, I'll answer any questions.
Other proponents of Senate Bill 58? Other proponents of Senate Bill 58? Questions? Do other proponents of Senate Bill 58?
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. Ed Anderson with the South Dakota Rural Electric Association. For the reasons that Commissioner Hansen has just stated, and from our standpoint, the commission is clearly positioning themselves as a clearinghouse, if for nothing else, for information regarding the development of wind energy in the state. We believe that that's a role that they should and can fill very well. And whether it's 5 megawatts or 100 megawatts, we believe that there are clearly potential public interest issues that the commission is positioned to address and should address and charged to address. And for that reason, we would urge your support. Thank you.
Thank you. Other proponents, Senate Bill 58. Other proponents? Questions for our proponents, members of the committee? Do we have opponents of Senate Bill 58? Opponents of Senate Bill 58? Close for committee discussion and action. Senator?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move due pass Senate Bill 58.
We have a due pass from Senator Roden. We have a second from Senator Abella. We have a motion. We have a second. It is a due pass motion. Is there discussion? Discussion? Seeing none, ask the Secretary to call the roll.
Senator Abdullah?
Aye.
Hansen?
Aye.
Heideprim?
Aye.
Knudsen?
Aye.
Olson?
Aye.
Roden?
Aye.
Gray?
Aye.
Dempster?
Aye.
Senate Bill 58 passes. Motion.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Gray.
Move consent.
Second. Consent motion from Senator Gray. We have a second from Senator Knudsen. Discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Senate Bill 58 moves to the consent calendar. Congratulations. Senator Roden, if you'd be kind enough to take this to caucus. Senator Heideprim, if you'd be kind enough to take this to your caucus. That then brings us to Senate Bill 59, revise certain provisions regarding the amount of the filing fee for the siting of energy facilities. Senate Bill 59. Do we have proponents?
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Rolaine Weiss. I'm an attorney with the Public Utilities Commission.
Welcome, Ms. Weiss.
Thank you. Senate Bill 59 seeks to clarify how much the commission can charge for the costs associated with a siting docket. This fee applies to a person who's seeking approval for the construction of energy facilities such as transmission lines or coal plants or pipelines. So going to the sentence beginning on line 12 of the first page, that sets forth the formula for determining the maximum fee. And the first part of the sentence provides that the maximum fee may not exceed 0.25% of the first $100 million. And then if you go to the second part of the sentence, that states that the fee may not exceed 0.125%. Now, we've always interpreted to mean that that the fee may not exceed 0.25% of the first $100 million plus 0.125% of the additional cost. However, as the statute currently exists, we think someone could argue that the fee is limited to the lower of the two calculations, and we don't think that this could be the correct interpretation because a project could conceivably cost, for example, $25,000 over the $100 million, and then you'd be limited to the $25,000. So what we would like to do is clarify the language in order to eliminate any question of how the calculation should be made. And so what we have done is we have we struck the words "and may not exceed" on the first page and inserted the word "plus," and we did the same thing on the second page with a similar formula. And just by way of a quick example, for example, Big Stone 2, the estimated construction costs were $1 billion, and under the formula as it currently exists, we could have assessed up to a maximum of $700,000. Now, even with this change after July 1st, if this bill goes into effect, and if somebody else had a project of $1 billion, our fee would still, maximum would still be $700,000. Thank you.
Are there proponents of Senate Bill 59? Are there proponents? Questions, members of the committee? Senator Heidefund.
I have a question for the council, for the PUC. I'm just wondering, maybe I'm missing something, but on line 12 and 13, as I read this bill, I wondered why we don't just say $250,000 as opposed to one quarter of 1% of $100 million, of the first $100 million. Isn't that the calculation?
Mr. Chairman, I guess we were just trying to clarify the plus and didn't want to make it more complicated as far as, I know that wouldn't make it more complicated, but as far as making additional changes.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I guess as I looked at this, it appeared to me that the way the statute was initially drafted was to set bookends in terms of what we could charge for purposes of carrying out our own investigation, mm-hmm. and that's why you had, you know, one bookend was $250,000 or a quarter of 1% of the first $100 million, and the other was then the sentences that are on lines 14 and 15. But you've changed it, or this proposal changes it, to make those in addition to one another. Is that right?
They would be, I'm sorry, Mr. Chairman, they would be added. Then this is the way we've always interpreted that. For example, a number of our projects don't ever exceed $100 million. So it's one quarter, 1% of the first $100 million. And then if it does exceed $100 million, we think that the second formula is in addition to that. And so it's plus 1/20th of 1% of the additional cost.
Other questions? Other questions, members of the committee? Thank you. Opponents of Senate Bill 59. Opponents of Senate Bill 59. Close for committee discussion and interaction.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Gray.
I move due pass on Senate Bill 59.
We have a due pass motion from Senator Gray. We have a second from Senator Roden. We have a motion. We have a second. Is there discussion? We have a motion. We have a second. Is there a due pass motion? Is there discussion? Ask the Secretary to call the roll.
Senator Abdullah? Aye. Hansen?
Aye.
Heideprim?
Aye.
Knutson?
Aye.
Olson?
Aye.
Roden?
Aye.
Gray?
Aye.
Dempster?
Aye. Senate Bill 59 passes 8-0. Do I hear a motion? Senator?
Move consent.
We have a consent. Senator Roden?
Mr. Chairman?
We have a Senator Gray?
I would oppose that. I think a fee bill, I'm not sure we should probably do you. That.
Thank you. That then moves us to Senate Bill 60, authorize the PUC to implement and comply with certain federal energy acts. Senate Bill 60. Do we have proponents?
Good morning again. My name is Relaine Weist with the PUC. Senate Bill 60 seeks to give the Commission authority to implement the Federal Energy Independence and Security Act of 2000. Among many other provisions, that new act adds new standards to the Public Utility Regulatory Policies Act of 1978, and that's commonly referred to as PURPA. The Federal Act's amendments to PURPA require state commissions to consider new PURPA standards and determine whether they're appropriate to implement. The commission, any state commission may decide not to implement any of these standards. And what this bill does, it amends a statute that we introduced a couple years ago to implement new PURPA requirements required in a 2005 Federal Energy Act. So this bill adds the four new PURPA standards contained in the 2007 Act. As with the 2005 standards, these only apply to our investor-owned utilities. Other utilities, such as cooperatives and municipals, they are required to make this evaluation on their own. So going to the bill, if you look on page 2, the first standard is on line 8, and this is subdivision 5, and it concerns energy efficiency. And if adopted by the commission, and the commission can adopt it as written or it can modify it, the standard would require a public utility to integrate energy efficiency resources into their planning process and adopt policies establishing cost-effective energy efficiency as a resource. And the term energy efficiency generally refers to efforts that allow customers to use less energy through, for example, deployment of newer technologies or replacement of existing devices. The standard in subdivision 6 also addresses energy efficiency, but it goes to the rates that can be charged by the public utility. And it would allow the public utility rates to align utility incentives with the delivery of cost-effective energy efficiency. There has been concern that standard rate-making procedures and practices may not encourage utilities from adopting energy conservation methods. And in some states, this has led to states decoupling their sales of electricity or natural gas or use other means to modify their rate design. And subdivision 7, beginning on line 14, that would just require that prior to investing in any new non-advanced grid technologies, a public utility would have to at least consider investing in a smart grid system. And some of those smart grid systems could include components such as infrastructure, control equipment, smart metering, smart appliances. And going to standard contained in subdivision 8 on line 16, this also has to do with smart grid information, and it would require public utilities to provide smart grid information regarding electricity prices, usage, and sources of power. And this standard would be intended to require that purchasers be provided with direct access to that type of information concerning pricing, usage intervals, and sources such as where does it come from, the greenhouse gas emissions, generation type, and a customer could receive that in writing or in electronic form. So with that, I'll stand by for questions. Thank you.
Thank you. Other proponents of Senate Bill 16? Other proponents of Senate Bill 16? Questions for those proponents? Questions, Senator Knudsen?
Question for Ms. Wiest. I just think I might as well learn something today. Tell me what a smart grid system is, presumably as compared to a normal grid.
One of the most frequent measures of a smart grid system is a smart metering system. It's referred to as advanced meter infrastructure. And those smart meters would allow information essentially flowing in two directions from the customer to the utility and from the utility to the customer. And what the utilities can do is, depending on what type of technology they can use things like real-time pricing, and consumers can look at their meter and determine when is the highest prices are and then try to cut down on the demand during that time. And there, besides the smart meters, there would also be, on the utility side, there would be different technologies that would electronically monitor, like, your lines and your system, and that would be another example of a smart grid technology.
You hear the term grid actually refers to almost a local distribution system. Normally a grid, you think of something going across the U.S. and so forth, but this is sounds like you're talking about a relative, that my house and 50 others in town might constitute the grid or something.
Mr. Chairman, that could be with the smart metering system, and as I said, the utility could also have some sort of infrastructure or smart grid systems on their side, and it would and they would do things like advanced communications systems and voltage control and things like that. So it could go beyond the customers, too.
Questions, members of the committee? Questions, members of the committee? Do we have opponents? Opponents? Do we have opponents? Close for committee discussion and or action. We have a do-pass motion from Senator Heideprin.
Second.
There was a second from Senator Gray. The motion is due pass. Motion by Senator Heiderplum, second by Senator Gray. Is there discussion as to the due pass motion? Seeing none, ask the Secretary to call the roll.
Senator Abdullah?
Aye.
Hansen?
Aye.
Heiderplum?
Aye.
Knutson?
Aye.
Olson?
Aye.
Roden?
Aye.
Gray?
Aye.
Dempster?
Aye. Senate Bill 60 passes with an 8-0. We have a consent motion from Senator Gray. We have a second from Senator Knutson. Is there discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Senate Bill 60 moves to the consent calendar. That then brings us to Senate Bill 68. Senate Bill 68 authorizes the establishment, operation, and control of research parks on state land.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Jim Shuckleton. I'm general counsel for the Board of Regents, and we appreciate the committee for putting this bill in the hopper on behalf of the Board of Regents.
Welcome, Jim.
I am distributing an amendment. There's nothing like posting a bill online to sharpen the interest in it, and we have had ongoing conversations with a number of parties who have been have an interest in the bill, sought points of clarification, and we've attempted with these amendments to provide that clarification. For the most part, they're attempting to coordinate or reiterate the meaning of some of the defined terms in the statute, or to provide some consistency in the expression. There are three areas in which we do have some substantive changes, and with your committee's permission, I'll address those areas as I quickly go through the bill.
As a courtesy to you as a proponent of this bill, would you like us to adopt this amendment so that we have the ability to address it?
I would be very grateful for that. Thank you.
Can I ask for a motion for Amendment 680A? We have a motion.
Second.
We have a second. Is there discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries.
Thank you. There are a number of people from out of town who wish to address this bill, so I'll try to confine my remarks as much as possible for me. As you know, that can be a challenge. Let me give you a little bit of historical context. The Board of Regents has been working with a private corporation and a nonprofit corporation in Brookings for a good almost 5 years now to create a research park in Brookings, associated with the South Dakota State University. The South Dakota Growth Partnership is the name of that entity. When we did our original leases, and we were relying upon authority that is in statute for the Board of Regents to do these leases, so long as it benefits the university. When we did the original leases, we had a number of restrictions in there that as the plans for the research park moved from the preliminary phases to the implementation phases became problematic when trying to work with clients. So shortly after the legislature went home last year, lawyers from the Growth Partnership approached me, and we began to work on revising that lease. As we went through the lease, we encountered a number of problems that really arose from South Dakota law and from statute. What we have in place in South Dakota is here, and this bill was brought to you in order to confirm the authority to create research parks on lands that are held by the state and for the use and benefit of the Board of Regents, and to provide for their governance in a fashion that's consistent with contemporary standards in the marketplace. We felt that statute was required to do that. There is also a community that in Sioux Falls, there was interest in the potential creation of a research park in Sioux Falls on some of the land that is held by the Board of Regents there, and we would need statutory authority for that given the restrictions of the legislature placed on the use of that land. So that's also addressed in this bill. Let me go quickly through this, and I will leave to the others the public policy benefits that can be achieved by creating research parks. Let me focus on the structure of the bill and walk you quickly through it. the first section does declare the purpose. And this is, it may seem an odd declaration, but it is truly significant. Many of the problems that we encountered in trying to write leases that were nimble enough to be marketable was the fact that South Dakota law involving the use and exploitation of public lands is 19th century law. It was written, and restrictions were put in place at a time when the highest and best use to the public of these public lands were to rent them out in order to realize rental income, or to sell them in order to realize the sale price to be reinvested. In the 21st century, and others will confirm this for you, in the 21st century, with research parks, there is another use that is equally high and equally beneficial to the public, and that is to create venues where the talented researchers and talented students can be brought together with industries that exploit the research results, that is, that take research from the laboratory into the marketplace and create jobs. By bringing those communities close together physically on public lands, it's possible to get the sort of synergy that is too often thought of as just a platitude, but it's quite real and quite beneficial and quite demonstrably beneficial both to the university and to the private sector and to the larger community of the nation. It's a model that was pioneered in the United States, and it's a model of cooperative development between public universities and private business that is being emulated throughout the world even today. South Dakota State University Innovation Campus is the very first attempt to raise one of these research parks in South Dakota. Every other state around us has them. The section of the bill in sections 3 and 4, section 1 states the purpose, section 3 and 4 confirm that the Board of Regents may set aside lands for these purposes and that the research park may bring in the range of tenants that are common to research parks. And that is consistent with the forms of delegation the legislature has made in the past. Sections 5 through 8 coordinate some of the responsibilities for the mineral rights and responsibilities for trust lands. At this point, there are no trust lands that are being developed as research parks. There's no proposal to do so on trust land. But in the event that at some point in the future some trust lands would be brought into the site, research park site, the School and Public Lands agreed that we have established a mechanism that will coordinate how we will restore value to the School and Public Lands Trust. We also have defined how we would address mineral rights. When we're talking about shallow heat conversion system, that there's a question of law whether that involves a mineral right. And under South Dakota law, the way in which current South Dakota law, the way in which mineral rights have to be leased is set out as a public auction. Well, you can't develop a building and say, put up a green building with a shallow heat conversion system, shallow earth heat conversion system, if you have to auction off the right to the heat conversion system. So we've just coordinated with School and Public Lands on that point. Sections 9 through 15 authorize the Board of Regents to go out and to enter into leases, and it could be for the development at the risk of the developer. It could be a lease with a private business. This is one model that's not frequently used for university-related research parks, but it exists. That would allow us to go out and do as we have done under our existing authority, but this would make it patent with a private nonprofit corporation such as the SDSU Growth Partnership. And it would also allow us to go out and to enter into a lease with a captive corporation, that is a corporation that is created pursuant to this act and that is governed or whose governing board is appointed by the Board of Regents. The remainder of this provision would require that leases contain provisions that would make sure that the underlying state interest and the revisionary interest could not be compromised under the terms of any lease or by executing on a lease or a lien or some other form of legal proceeding. There are also provisions in here that would provide that the Research Park lease could have a duration that is permitted up to 99 years for municipal leases, and that's the existing law, but it is express authority to do that. If we're going to have a 99-year lease, then obviously there has to be some restriction, some assurance that the leaseholder will perform, and this is addressed in Section 13. There would be commercially reasonable requirements that, in every lease for performance standards for the lessee, plus the lease have to contain terms that would allow for the enforcement of those provisions, including by termination of the lease. So we have protections for the public built into this as well. Section 14 addresses an oddball problem that we have under existing South Dakota law for the Board of Regents. If we were to lease bare ground, somebody puts up a building on there, at the end of the lease, that building would not revert to the Board of Regents. We would have to get a statute passed or a special bill passed that would allow us to take possession of the building. That means that we have to write leases that require that any improvements be taken down at the end of the leasehold. This is causing some problem in trying to market our research park, and so we would like to have authorization for the purpose of research park, essentially an exception to the general prohibition that would otherwise not allow us to take title to the improvement at the end of the lease. And then Section 15 reiterates the standard requirements that neither the Board of Regents nor its lessees could create a debt by contract that would become a debt on the state, nor would you have the option of, through your operations, creating a claim that would fall back and create a debt from the state. Now, this is, if I may pop back to the amendment for a moment, we have on the amendment amended Section 15. They'll find that about two-thirds of the way down, where it refers to on page 4, line 24, there is inserted language that in the printed bill had been in Section 19. But we've deleted Section 19 and rolled it into Section 15 with the proposed amendment. It would have the effect that I've indicated that Section 15 would now address contractual or obligations created by the board or the lessee, and this would be obligations that might arise through the conduct of the research park. Consider the possibility of a trademark dispute based upon the use of marks for the research park. Section 19, as I indicated, we are deleting in this amendment. I jumped ahead of myself. Section 16 through Section 21 all relate to the Research Park Corporation. Many of the amendments that you see before you are just clarifying that the Research Park Corporation is not a descriptive turn of phrase, but is a technical, it is a turn of phrase that means a captive corporation created pursuant to Section 16. Authorizes the Board of Regents to create one for the purpose of operating research park. This is very common in statutes that authorize university-related research parks. 16 provides for the governance by the Board of Regents, again, very common. Section 18 merely reiterates the nonprofit test in Section 501 of the Internal Revenue Code. Section 20 and 21 make clear that this is a truly private corporation. It's not a public corporation, and it's not subject to the statutes that regulate the conduct of public bodies. One of the problems that arises in this context, and one of the reasons for this provision, relates to how these research corporations deal with leases of prospective clients. You don't let just anybody come in and say, I've got a great idea, I want to put up a $5 million building and pursue research. You want to find out a background, a due diligence background check, make sure that person does have a great idea, make sure that person does have the financing in order to coordinate, and then once to operate, make sure that they're doing what they say they're doing. The lessee has to have access to a lot of trade secret information or very sensitive business information. So typically research parks, particularly associated with public universities, specifically assure their prospective clients that this information will not be subject to disclosure under open records law. So that's what we're trying to accomplish there. We did add one amendment, and this was, again, at the request of a commentator. This amendment is on the second page of the draft amendments, the third bullet down. And the concern was, since we were talking about addressing the captive research park corporation not being subject to the general rules governing public bodies, how would that, the question was, how would that play through restrictions on the kinds of research that might be undertaken in South Dakota? And this attempts to say, you know, the fact that there may not be required to have public meetings of the of that board does not entail that they can do fetal tissue research in South Dakota any more than it entails that they can discriminate on the basis of race and their hiring. So this is simply a reaffirming what we think was there at all points. I would refer you to the finally, and then I will stand by to answer any questions or at least to address them. The amendment, this would be the fourth bullet down from the top on the first page. There is a fairly substantial body of text that is added to the definition of research park. And this was brought forward at the request of the Growth Partnership in order to incorporate into the statute some of the common functions that are carried out at research parks. And the definition borrows from the definition of a research park that is published by the Association of University Research Parks, a national group that coordinates and represents the interests of research parks as a genre. I appreciate your patience with me, and I'll be happy to answer questions at the appropriate time.
Thank you. Other proponents of Senate Bill 68? Other proponents of Senate Bill 68?
Good morning. My name is Al Kurtenbach. I'm representing the South, the SDSU Growth Partnership, which is located in Brookings.
Senator Kurtenbach, you are welcome here.
Thank you. Thank you. And we support Senate Bill 68 as amended. Just a little bit of background. You know, South Dakota, I think, does really an excellent job of educating knowledge workers. unfortunately, we don't retain enough of them in South Dakota to work here and to contribute to what I call the, or actually what, to join the fraternity of South Dakota taxpayers. And overall, I see this as a enabling piece of legislation to encourage more of our knowledge workers, our university graduates, to join this fraternity of South Dakota taxpayers. Just as an example, I'll give you the Daktronics story. Back 40 years ago, when Duane Sander and I were on the faculty, the engineering faculty at SDSU, we became very aware of this fact that we had wonderful young people that wanted to stay in South Dakota but could not find employment here. And so we took the initiative to found Daktronics. Now, in South Dakota, we employ around 2,400 people at Daktronics, and about two-thirds of these are knowledge workers. And so we have demonstrated, I would say, that this concept works. Now, what I see this bill as really as enabling legislation to enable the investment of private money close to campuses where these knowledge workers are gaining their knowledge and where they hang out, you know, 24 hours a day. Some of them live in dormitories or close by, and create relationships with these young people so that when they graduate, hopefully they'll stay and go to work here in South Dakota. So I see this as enabling legislation that will allow private investment and create grow the tax base in South Dakota, which longer term will, of course, generate more tax revenue for the state, which this year, of course, we're very sensitive to the need of that. And it's not going to happen immediately. I mean, if you pass this enabling legislation, the tax revenue is not going to jump up tomorrow. But if you want to do something for future legislators, this might be a way to help them out a little bit. And so the Growth Partnership has spent a good bit of time vetting this bill, and we think as amended, it would work well as we go out and deal with private investors that might be interested and willing to come and put their money on the line and build facilities close to a campus in South Dakota. So we support this bill as the organization, and I personally also support this bill. So thank you.
Thank you, Senator. Good to see you. Other proponents for Senate Bill 68. Other proponents?
Good morning. Excuse me. Frog in my throat here. Scott Munz from the Mayor, City of Brookings, also Vice Chair, SDSU Growth Partnership. Appreciate being here. Just echo what Dr. Kurtenbach said. We've entered the knowledge-based economy, and just the fact that we have resources like our university system and the land around the university system is really prime candidate, so to speak, for this type of development, and that's what's occurred in Brookings. And we haven't been without our pain in the pioneering process, obviously, and working through some amendments that you see in this particular bill today. But we're here to tell you that we do support sections 1 through 15, as they do, in particular, address our needs from the development that we have in Brookings. We came together as a team in Brookings about 5 or 6 years ago. The city and the county and SDSU and SDSU Foundation and the business community in a large way and developed what's the Innovation Center, and I'd invite all of you folks at some point in time when you pass through Brookings to make a visit. But just wanted you to know that there is merit. We have good merit in sections 1 through 15 as it pertains to us, and we feel that the Board of Regents have been very good to work with the last week and a half in helping us address our concerns in this bill, and we look forward to its continuation through the process. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Other proponents? Other proponents?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Bob O'Connell from the Sioux Falls Area Chamber of Commerce.
Welcome, Bob.
Thank you. Representing as well the Sioux Falls Development Foundation and Forward Sioux Falls. We support this bill as amended because we believe research-based economic development is important for South Dakota. Using public land in support of public and private research is good for the state and the local economy in which research takes place. This bill, as amended, will provide adequate protection for the state to ensure that the land is used for the purposes of discovery and innovation. We think it strikes a good balance between the need to protect the state, fulfills the constitutional requirements, and allows for needed flexibility for research and innovation. We thank you for your support of this bill. Look forward to doing some of this in Sioux Falls. Thank you.
Thank you. Other proponents of Senate Bill 68? Other proponents of Senate Bill 68? Other proponents? Questions for the proponents of Senate Bill 68? Questions? Senator Clemson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have sort of a series of questions for Mr. Shackleton, if I could perhaps have the indulgence to ask a series to him. These are probably fairly technical things, Jim. First, on the way you define a Research Park Corporation in Section 4, wouldn't it have made more sense to use that defined term and use the phrase form pursuant to Section 16 of this Act in the definition of a research park corporation, then the way the amendment keeps spreading form through pursuant to Section 16 of this Act throughout the bill?
We were trying to work with commentators. That may have been a more elegant solution, but the problem that gave rise to the ambiguity would have recurred because it was the use of the defined term in Section 16 and thereafter, as well as in the sections relating to the terms of the lease, that gave rise to the concern in the first place. We had originally had the definition that you see in place.
I'm not totally sure I agree with that, but I'm probably willing to concede it. Second, you referred to this a couple times as a captive corporation, yet nowhere in here did I find that the Board of Regents was required to be the sole member.
We did not.
Isn't that
critical? That is a turn of phrase rather than a turn of art. It is captive in the sense that the Board of Regents controls the appointment of the directors.
But isn't the real importance being the sole member, and shouldn't we, wouldn't that be a good amendment or change to make to require it to be a sole member, because that the member is ultimately entitled to receive the resources?
Yeah. That would certainly be a good amendment. We'd be welcome for that.
What is meant in Section 3 by dedicate state lands? The word dedicate is kind of unusual here, and I couldn't tell if that's just sort of a resolution that says we intend to use this for research park, or is it dedication? You think of dedicating a street or dedicating for a park, which is usually some sort of document recorded at the Register of Deeds and constituting sort of a legal commitment.
Dedication. Again, I was thinking in terms of ordinary language that it was dedicated not as a defined term, but once you enter into a 99-year lease, it might be permitted. It is encumbered in a fashion that is potentially as nearly permanent as a permanent dedication. And that is how I chose that word. But once again, used would be preferable, certainly deferred to the committee's judgment.
And I just have two more. One, my understanding that there is never authorization in this bill to convey title
correct
to property. The most extensive departure from a title is a 99-year lease. Is that correct? That's the most you can give is a 99-year lease.
That's correct.
Okay.
There is no intent to convey title. That's correct.
And then lastly is in Section 21 on line 23, where you're in Sections 20 and 21, as you're trying to not bog down this Research Park Corporation with sort of the state bidding and all those kinds of statutes. But I wondered how gross receipts tax crept in there in line 23. It wouldn't seem ordinarily to have anything to do with regarding regulation of the conduct of public bodies.
I do not recall where I came across that in terms of my research, and I confess I do not recall that.
Is there any intention to eliminate taxes that a nonprofit formed for education and research purposes would otherwise have to pay?
No, it wasn't. There wouldn't. I do not recall that. I have to get back to the Senator.
Okay. Thank you.
Members, Senator Heiderpump. Also for Mr. Shackleton, Jim, Senator Knutson's questions took care of some of the notes I had, but I was just wondering generally, I note that in the amendment, part of the difficulty, of course, is the amendment's rather extensive, and we just now have seen it for the first time. I'm trying to track it on the printed bill that I have, but I note on page, in the amendment, we talk about page 4 line 24, and there's a reference to indebtedness, legal or moral. Is that language of some particular significance to you? I see it also occurs on section 19 of the printed bill, line 13.
To the extent that under South Dakota law that there isn't a moral obligation, but it is an attempt to make clear that the state is not going to be obligated, even if there is a claim arising from the operation of the research park that that the claim as well, gee, the right thing to do is to step up to the plate and pay this obligation, even though you do not have a legal obligation to do that. It's an attempt to make clear that under no circumstances, the maximum protection for the state for any claim arising from the liability of the operation research park. So it's a belts and suspenders approach.
If I could, Mr. Chairman. Again, Senator Knutson asked you about Section 21, and that also caught my eye, and I wanted to, as I walk through it and then overlay the amendment, which is...
The amendment is on the second page.
Right, on page 5, line 24. So walk through that with me. Section 21 would now say, the research park is not subject to statutes or rules regulating the conduct of public bodies, and Senator Knutson had the colloquy with you about the tax issue. But then we add an amendment that says, but it is subject to criminal laws, and then we have language that says, or other statutes of general application. What do you mean to pull in by that expression? I mean, what is it that the research park is no longer subject to, I guess, when you read the printed bill and then the additional amended language?
There are numbers of provisions that relate specifically to the operation of public bodies that are unique to those, and these are the ones that we're trying to reach in the original Section 21. The question arose whether that language might be construed to relieve the Research Park Corporation. This would be the control corporation. Whether the language might exclude it from restrictions that are in law. The specific question had to do with the genetic research or research related using fetal tissue, that sort of research. Whether this language in Section 21 as introduced would relieve the Research Park Corporation from the responsibility to avoid sponsoring that sort of research. And the compromise is to say, well, even though this is not subject to the laws governing the conduct of public bodies, it still remains subject to criminal laws or laws of general application that apply to all entities, both public and private. And the restrictions on the use of fetal tissue in research apply to persons. No person in South Dakota shall, was the phrase in the statute. And likewise, the restrictions on or the prohibition against discrimination on the basis of age or religion applies to all persons, public and private, that operate in South Dakota. And the Section 21 is not intended to relieve the Research Park Corporation from the obligation to conform to those.
If I can, Mr. Chairman, then you see no conflict between the sort of general language of other statutes of general application and the specific things that are identified in Section 21.
I'm sorry, I think I missed it.
You don't see a conflict between the language other statutes of general application and what that pulls in versus the specifics of Section 21.
No, I think that they're sufficiently clear that we're talking about what in olden times might have been in the public code that was clearly designed to regulate the code of operation of public bodies. And we have those specifically. They're different places, but in Title 5 and Title 13 would be the ones that are most relevant to the activities of the state. So I think that... suffices. There are some entitled ones as well. One, 5 and 13 are the ones that generally regulate public bodies and their operation as a particular species of legislative object. And that is the type of prohibition without limitation. Obviously, we try to illustrate it with without limiting that we have addressed in this.
Members of the committee, questions for proponents? Questions for proponents? Thank you.
Thank you.
Opponents of Senate Bill 68. Opponents of Senate Bill 68. Do we have opponents of Senate Bill 68? Seeing none, close for committee discussion and or action. Senator Heideperm.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I certainly didn't mean my questions to be hostile at all to the concept that's embodied in Senate Bill 68. This is a very important piece of legislation, and I am certain that we are going to be able to accommodate not only the interests of the people who spoke specifically, but the future of South Dakota and the importance of research. My only question would be whether the committee feels that the bill is in such shape that it's ready to go to the floor. I'm happy with it either way. I mean, we need to actually take 68OA, the amendments, and overlay them just to make it clear that we understand what the amendments intend. I think we do, but I would certainly be open, and if Senator Knutson felt that some of his questions spurred the need for amendments, we could always hold an amendment here or take care of it later, but it's important that we pass it.
Thank you, Senator. Comments? Members of the committee?
Mr. Chairman, in about 1 minute, I think I'll have an amendment that cleans up, I think, three things that ought to be cleaned up, and after that, I think I'm probably satisfied with the form.
Okay. Members of the committee, additional items of discussion and or questions? We will be at ease for a couple of minutes. Reopen for committee discussion and or action. Senator Knudsen.
Mr. Chairman, I there are really just three things that I think I'd like to address. So I would propose this amendment that on page 3, line 14, we delete the word dedicate and insert utilize. Again, I think dedication has is a phrase that kind of comes from the concept of dedicating streets and so forth. Second, on page 5, at the end of line 8, I think we should just add the sentence, each research park corporation shall have the Board of Regents as its sole member. Again, membership in a corporation is kind of like being a stockholder, and it's to the member that the ultimate assets go upon dissolution, and so it should be a wholly owned entity. And then last is on page 5, line 21, delete gross receipts tax. And with that, I'd make that motion as an amendment.
Second. We have a motion and we have a second to amend. We have a motion and we have a second to amend. Are there questions as to the amendment? Are there questions as to the amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Amendment passes. We return then to Senate Bill 68 as amended. Is there discussion? Senator Heideprom.
Senator Knutson, would you tell me again about the section, the amendment on page 2, line 14, the section 3? We replaced the word dedicate with the word utilize.
Yes. To me, dedication kind of comes, used in the context of real property, comes from dedicating it for a particular purpose, which involves a sort of an alienation of the right to use it for anything sure. else. Again, dedication for streets and parks being the most common examples. And I don't think the intention is to have that sort of alienation concept of the utilization right. just seemed like a better word.
I'm just wondering if that's the only change you made to the section. Wouldn't we also need to change the word to, or did you also anticipate that, the word after control? Was that a part of your amendment?
Probably the word to doesn't... we should probably take out to and insert for.
Yeah.
We'll take that as a as language that was meant to be included in the additional amendment. Is that acceptable?
That's fine with me.
Acceptable to members of the committee? Thank you. Additional discussion to Senate Bill 68 as amended. Additional discussion and or questions as to Senate Bill 68 as amended. Senator Knutson.
I move to pass.
We have a due pass motion from Senator Knutson. We have a due pass motion from Senator Knutson. We have a second from Senator Heiderprem. Is that correct? We have a motion. We have a second. Is there additional discussion? Seeing none, ask the Secretary to call the roll on Senate Bill 68 as amended.
Senator Abdullah?
Aye.
Greg, Hansen?
Aye.
Heidekrim?
Aye.
Knutson?
Aye.
Olson?
Aye.
Roden?
Aye.
Gray?
Aye.
Dempster?
Aye.
Senate Bill 68 passes 8-0 as amended. Thank you, proponents of the bill, for your skill. Thank you, members of the committee, equally for your skill. That then brings us to Senate Bill 5. Senate Bill 5 revised the form and style of certain provisions and to delete certain obsolete provisions regarding the Department of Tourism and State Development. Who are proponents of Senate Bill 5?
Good morning, Mr. Chairman.
Well, you're here.
Of course.
Senator Gant, welcome.
Thank you. Jason Gant, State Senator from Sioux Falls, District 11, and I'm so happy to bring forward to you a bill that is 43 pages long. Over the summer, from the last legislative session, the Tourism and State Development Summer Study Committee was put together, and that committee had, I served as a member of that along with a number of members. Former Representative Heineman chaired it, along with former Senator Albers. And we had many great discussions and learned many different things about the department and different areas that they're involved in and how different things work. One of my observations of those discussions was the Arts Council. We heard from many different Arts Councils from around the state as well as the State Arts Council, and just very impressed with what they've done in the past and what their goals are for the future. This bill is, just like the title says, removes many outdated and update different language for the Department of Tourism and State Development. Most of it is just cleanup language, like I said. The one section that to bring your attention to is on page 9, section 19. This was language that is no longer used, and the department is going to discuss that further. But I wanted to bring that to your attention as one of the more just one of the bigger areas that's being changed in the bill. So with that, Mr. Chairman, I'll let the department come forward and give some more rationale on the bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator. Other proponents?
Chair, Kim Olson, with the Deputy Secretary with the Department of Tourism and State Development.
Welcome, Kim.
I will go ahead and go through the bill. I'm going to just touch on seven areas briefly that do have some changes that are affecting them. As Senator Gant said, Senate Bill 5 is largely a style and form changes, deletion of obsolete and abolished statutes, and transfer of code in areas when tourism and state development had been reorganized that didn't get transferred appropriately. I will start with Section 2 in that they are moving codified law 1-4-4 to chapter 1-52, which is the tourism and state development chapter. This is an example of a section that did not get moved with the reorganization. In section 19, they are updating obsolete and inconsistent statutes. This is the one that Senator Gant has just referred to. Specifically, this is related to our READY program. And when our READY law was updated a couple years back, this did not get deleted. It refers to a one-to-one match loan that we no longer implemented, no longer exists in the READY program. In Section 21, they are moving the South Dakota Science and Technology Authority. It incorrectly inserted in that original legislation the Bureau of Personnel, and what should have been inserted was the Board of Finance, and so it's just making that change. In Section 70, it's a style and form change, and it's related to historical preservation statutes, which are within our department. In Section 123 through 125, they are making changes in the language from GOED to now Department of Tourism and State Development to update that, to be a part of that department. Again, wasn't updated with the reorganization. In Sections 126, 127, and 130, they are repealing three statutes that the sites have at this point been abolished. And then finally, in Section 129, proposing to transfer five tourism sites to Law 1-52, the Tourism and State Development Chapter. This also didn't get moved under reorganization. So upon our agency's review of this legislation, we do see it as Senator Gantz stated, style and form changes, and we are a supporter of this legislation.
Thank you. Other proponents of Senate Bill 5? Other proponents of Senate Bill 5.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Julie Johnson. I work for Absolutely Aberdeen, which is a growth initiative in Northeast South Dakota.
Welcome, Julie.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We were very fortunate to participate in all of the interim committee meetings on this subject. I thought it was an incredibly healthy process. We were also pleased to be able to host one of the subcommittee meetings in our region so that members of the committee could see how some of the economic development tools are used on the ground in our region. It was a great process. I've done these legal issues with the department and our economic development tools for a long time, so I went through this bill with fine-tooth comb too, and I think it's in good form, and appreciate the process everyone went through to examine all of that. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Other proponents of Senate Bill 5? Other proponents of Senate Bill 5? Questions for our proponents? Senator Heidepin.
For Senator Gantt, please. Senator Gantt, I've seen your name associated with a number of these projects in the past, and I think they're very helpful and very important that we continue to update things. All I want to know from you is this is what I would call a trust me bill. The title refers to the changes being style and form. And do you know of any substantive changes contained in this bill that represent policy changes or policy differences of any kind?
Mr. Chairman? No, I do not. The only section that concerned me was Section 9, because I didn't know that there was a different section there. Or Section 19, I'm sorry, page 9.
Well, Mr. Chairman, Senator Gantt, as I was reading this bill last night, and I think I got to about Section 45, and I was watching the inaugural events, and pretty soon I was just watching the inaugural events. I thought I'd just ask you that, and I trust you, and I appreciate the hard work that you and the committee put into this bill.
Thank you. Other questions for proponents? We have opponents to Senate Bill 5. Seeing none, close for committee discussion and or action. Senator?
Mr. Chairman, I also was able to have the privilege of sitting on the summer study, and as a former employee of the Governor's Office of Economic Development, I compared it to being the bellman at a hotel and eventually coming back to be able to do the annual review of your former boss and colleagues. And so I can say that the process was actually very rewarding for me to be able to take part of it. Our state tourism and economic development wing does an extreme amount of work with the limited resources that we provide them, and I think that they all do a great job, and I would urge the support of this bill.
Additional comments? I hear a due pass motion from Senator Gray. I hear a second from Senator Olson. The motion is due pass. Is there additional discussion? Seeing none, ask the Secretary to call the roll.
Senator Abdullah?
Aye.
Hansen?
Aye.
Heidepin?
Aye.
Knutson.
Aye.
Olson.
Aye.
Broden.
Aye.
Gray.
Aye.
Dempster.
Aye. Senate Bill 5 passes with an 8-0 vote. I hear a consent motion. I hear a second for the consent from Senator Olson. Discussion? All those in favor? I hear a no from Senator Heidepunt. The bill does not move to the consent calendar. We will move three confirmations then to our next meeting, and we are holding Senate Bill 41. As such, then, I ask for a motion to adjourn. Motion, second, discussion. All those in favor? Opposed? We stand adjourned.